So welcome to edition two of the Pakistan Cricket Pod. This is the February edition. With me is Shah Faisal, as he was last month. And we'll be talking about various cricketing matters, primarily revolving around Pakistan cricket, but we'll also touch on some world cricketing matters in this episode. So firstly, my first question to Shah Faisal in this particular episode is that Misbah-ul Haq has recently suggested that there's a very tight gap between the PSL final and the first test match, and it's going to be difficult for the players to go from T20 mode to test mode in such a quick amount of time, in quick succession, with just a four-day gap between the PSL final and the first test. What's your view on this? I'll just give you a brief indication of my view. My view is that the modern player has to adapt. And if it is an issue, we should take out the PSL test players from the playoffs in the final so they can mentally and physically prepare for the first test match, like what happens in Big Bash, the 100, even in past CPL editions, test players have had to limit their involvement. So if test cricket and the national team is taking a priority, should the test players in the PSL have to say goodbye to the tournament early? What's your view on that?
Hello, Abdullah. Yeah, Misbah-ul Haq's points are valid. You cannot say that they're not valid, but like you summed it up pretty nicely, that the modern day cricketer has to adapt very, very quickly. And in Pakistan's case, I mean, the ground realities are such that is just, I mean, everybody's just happy that the tour is happening and the scheduling and everything was crammed in. Because remember, Australia couldn't stretch their dates any further because the IPL is starting as well. So that was a problem. But at the end of the day, I think the tour happening is the biggest positive. And in terms of the availability of the players or the their restricted involvement in the playoffs, PSL as a brand is also taking off at this stage. So this wouldn't be easy as well. You gave the examples of CPL, Big Bash and all that. They're established leagues and they've always been played in their country, respective countries. So it's not easy for PSL to withdraw its star names from the playoffs. Because remember, the scheduling was already adjusted to accommodate the Australian tour. That meant that a lot of the star attraction from overseas couldn't come over anyway. So I think for now, like you said, the players will have to adapt very quickly and they will be asked to do that and they will be expected to do that. But also Misbah-ul Haq made a second point in that similar statement that you're talking about. He said, okay, if you bow down to the ground realities and accept that there's no other way around, then you don't blame players and management staff if the results don't go accordingly. So that's his second point. So I think both of his points are pretty logical, but ground realities are such that even in ideal conditions, the international player has to adapt quickly. And in Pakistan's case, it's not ideal because we're so far behind and we're just so keen to have international cricket around that no other terms and conditions could be discussed. The tour just needs to happen and this is what will take precedence over any other issue.
I'm with you that players have to adapt and that's part of the modern game in packed, congested calendars. Players have to go from one format to another format and extreme differences of formats such as test and T20. If there are concerns at management level and board level, this is one possible solution that we limit the involvement of the test players in the latter stages of the PSL. But I don't think that the board or the management is that concerned. I think this is just Misbah-ul Haq raising the issue. I think the board and the management are relatively comfortable with the players playing the whole PSL and then going into the test match. It's just part of the modern game. Let's move on to another topic. So we've got four test series coming up, four very interesting series. We've had a bit of a gap in test cricket, but test cricket is resuming. World Test Championship cricket is resuming very soon. We've got the South African team visiting New Zealand. We've got England team going to the West Indies. I'm sure you came across the news yesterday that Anderson and Broad have been left out, and a new era will start in English cricket. And of course, as we all know, that the Australian team is due to visit Pakistan. And also, the post-Virat Kohli era will start in Indian cricket when they host Sri Lanka. So that's four series there. Out of those four series, everybody knows that Pakistan hosting Australia will be the highest profile of those four series. But in your opinion, which is going to be the most interesting series with the away team is likely to challenge in terms of a head-to-head contest, which is going to be the most interesting and intriguing of those four series?
Well, I think you may call it bias or not, but I think Pakistan-Australia, even other than the special circumstances under which it's happening, I mean, cricketing ability-wise and talent-wise also, Pakistan-Australia should be right up there. Because remember, Australia coming out of that Ashes victory, I mean, their bowling is formidable and bowling will be challenged under the subcontinent conditions in Pakistan. And Pakistan, on the other hand, with so many up-and-coming world stars in their lineup, would take this as the biggest challenge to take on the Australian team that has just won the Ashes. I think Pakistan and Australia should be, like you rightly said, one of the top, not one of the top, I think it will get most viewership in terms of the anticipation, the expectation, and the quality of cricket as well. England, West Indies is always going to be very, very keenly fought. I mean, I know West Indies hasn't done well in Test cricket, but remember last time when England were there, West Indies did defeat them. So at home, West Indies versus England, I think West Indies brings out their best game against England, even in the last decade or so where their Test cricket has gone down significantly. So that'll be good. But if you want me to pick one series, I think it has to be Pakistan-Australia.
I agree with you to the extent that it's Pakistan hosting Australia is the highest profile of those four series. But as a contest, I think it's going to be the most one-sided of the four series. I think Pakistan is going to win comfortably. I know you might say I'm optimistic, but I think it's going to be very tough for Australia with all 11 players playing their first ever test match in Pakistan to overcome an informed Pakistan test team that has won 7 of their last 8 test matches. But let's build on that.
Australia. Just one thing, Abdullah, let me make this point also that Australia, like you said, they're touring for the first time and a lot of these players will be playing for the first time in Pakistan. But Pakistan's home cricket over the past 15 years, including that 10 years in UAE, where the pitches had a similarity that offered nothing, especially to the teams coming from down under or England. So that's why Australia has lost regularly. England has lost regularly as well. But remember, New Zealand won even in those conditions, but they were like the best all-round team of those three at the time. But Pakistan conditions offer different situations and the pitches are not as the Pakistani players have gotten used to over the last 12, 13 years as well. So it is as much a challenge for the Australian team as it is for the local team as well.
Yeah, I'm with you there, but that we can't confuse it with the UAE, and there are some differences, notably that the pitches will not help the spinners as much as it does in grounds such as Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Sharjah. And the spinners will have to work harder for their wickets. But on a different note, we've got Usman Khawaja. He's going to be playing a test match in the city of his birth in the opening match of the series. I don't know whether you've noticed this, but when players play against the country of their origin and their heritage, they tend to raise their game and they tend to be extra motivated to do well. We saw it recently in India when Ijaz Patel took all 10 wickets. He was playing in the city of his birth, Mumbai. Is he the man to watch out for? I just think he's going to be extra motivation for him. Even though he's not as high profile a player as Labuschagne, Steve Smith or David Warner, but I feel he's going to be the player to watch out for. And he's got good memories against Pakistan. Last time they met in the Emirates, he scored a match-saving century.
Yeah, Usman, like you said, Usman Khawaja will definitely be the center of attraction. He's not the biggest name in the Australian batting lineup, but his connection with Pakistan and is really definitely going to be another intriguing aspect. And like you said, it's right, because when you go to places of your birth, you still have your extended family over there, like Usman mentioned in a recent interview as well. So you also want to make a point and prove a point to them as well that how good you are. That's extra bit of motivation for all those players. And like you rightly mentioned, Ejaz Patel, who got 10 wickets in the city of his birth in one innings. I think Nasir Hussain, originally from Chennai, he had something extra when he toured India as well. So Usman Khawaja, like I just saw him recently in an interview, and he's beaming. I mean, you couldn't take that smile off his face. He was so delighted about this tour. And there will be no surprise if it gives him that extra motivation to get 100. And if any pitch in Pakistan is closer to Australian conditions, that is that Rawalpindi pitch. So that should also be, I mean, unless they turn it into a dust ball, which normally doesn't happen, they can slow it down as much as they can, but still it is probably, will have conditions closer to Australia than anywhere in Pakistan. So it may just play into his hands, but in terms of motivation and inspiration, I think there will be no shortage of that for Usman Khawaja.
Now, I've come across a stat, or a stat I've known about for some time, in fact. Pakistan has the highest win-loss ratio at home of any team. It's not India, it's not Australia, it's Pakistan in Test cricket history. I know you've mentioned that you feel that the series happening in Pakistan as opposed to UAE will even up the contest more because of extra help for the fast bowlers and less help for the spinners, etc. But doesn't that show how difficult Pakistan is to beat at home? Historically, out of all the test playing nations, no team has a higher win-loss ratio on home soil in test cricket than Pakistan. So don't you think the Aussies are going to have to play out of their skins to even win one test match?
I mean, we don't argue that Pakistan is a very strong team at home. And like you said, the stats are there to back it up. But somehow it may be just me, but you know, cricket coming back home is like, for now, if you ask me the best Pakistan combination for this series, I'm not sure. Because we don't have as much depth in our spin department. And then anytime a team visits subcontinent, you expect that the spinners will take over and they'll be your match winners. I don't see that happening because the quality of spin department in Pakistan team at the moment is very, very, I mean, not as it used to be, especially in terms of mystery spin, you know. We have two very good, honest finger spinners, the likes of Noman and Sajid. But you know, Australian players, they use their feet very well. And they could really take them on. We don't have any mystery spinner. We don't have a good leg spinner with a good wrong-un. I mean, Yasir Shah is there, but he's not fully fit. He's been announced in the reserves. Zahid Mahmood, he's got a good leg spinner and a slider, but he doesn't have a big googly. So that mystery element could be taken out very quickly. Australians are very, very good against spin. I mean, it's unless it's a square turner where everyone will struggle. And there is in no mystery. So, I mean, that's what I just think, that Pakistan need to re-establish what are their strengths at home. Because the stats that you're quoting is like from almost 20 years ago. And at that time, you know, the 90s generation, Pakistan was a formidable side in 80s and 90s at home. And that's probably the reason for the stats and the win-loss ratio that you were just mentioning. Because since 2000 onward, I mean, there was very few high-profile series in Pakistan. I think amongst England, Australia, and New Zealand, and India, after 2005, I think there's one England series and there's one India series, or probably two India series in those 20 years, 22 years. So not high-profile series being played in Pakistan in the last 22 years. And the stats were beefed up because 80s and 90s Pakistan did have a formidable side. And remember, in those days, the SENA countries, South Africa probably wasn't there, but they didn't like to come to subcontinent. So they will always send their the top players would always opt out of the tours as well. So you have to keep a lot of factors in mind when you're just referring to the stats. But currently, I think Pakistan needs to reestablish what are their strengths at home. And I think it's a big question.
I like that last point you made about in the 80s, going to the subcontinent wasn't considered a fashionable place to go. And perhaps modern generation are not aware of this, and they might find it a bit shocking that players didn't even go to the World Cup because it was held in the subcontinent. Big name players like Richard Hadlee missed the 87 World Cup because it was in Asia. Ian Botham missed the 87 World Cup because it was in Asia. I mean, if you think about it now, it's shocking, but this is what it was like.
Absolutely. And probably the money has changed it all, because the satellite deals came in the early 90s. And then after that, you know, the IPL and all these franchise leagues, you know, and it was very quickly realized that all the money, or most of the money generated by World of Cricket, comes from these parts. So the trend has changed, and IPL has definitely changed everything, because now you see a lot of these players, they have homes in India and they spend like almost 6 months over there. Whereas opposed to, like you said, Richard Hadlee refused to tour India. And then Ian Botham, David Gower, they didn't like to come to Pakistan for that World Cup that you mentioned in 1987. And now you think of the likes of Brett Lee and all these players. I mean, they spent 6 months in India. And that's, times have changed, definitely. And for the obvious reasons, which don't need to be mentioned too often, but you know what I mean. And which is good. I mean, because these are, I don't think in the whole world cricket is as vibrant as it is in the subcontinent. Even now, with the induction of Bangladesh and Afghanistan, this is the strong zone of world cricket. So you cannot ignore it anymore like players used to do in the past.
So coming back to the Pakistan hosting Australia, so we both agree that it's the highest profile test series coming up out of the four ones that we've mentioned, but we slightly disagree, we slightly differ on the point of how close the series is going to be. You think it's going to be a very tough series and a very well fought series, and both teams have the ability to win the series, whereas I think it's going to be one-sided and Pakistan is going to dominate, and I'm expecting the other series to be more competitive in terms of engaging test matches that where both the teams can win equally, such as South Africa and New Zealand and England in West Indies, and also Sri Lanka in India. I came across the stat that Sri Lanka has never won a test match in India, which is astonishing given that they've got the highest wicket taker of all time in Murali, and still they never in their history managed to win a test match in India. Isn't that fascinating that no subcontinent team has actually won a test match in India apart from Pakistan?
It is indeed. But, you know, if you ask Murali which country, the one country that their batters really handle them well would be India. Not just Sachin Tendulkar, but the whole and the entire batting lineup. And somehow they got the better of Murali Dharan throughout his entire career. But that New Zealand-South Africa series is a mouth-watering series as well, because it's incredible the way South Africa keep producing the talent as well. I mean, they had a massive drain out through Kolpak, which has been reversed now. So that will give them even more options to pick a very, very strong side. And New Zealand being the World Test champions, you know, always, will compete and will give their best. I mean, even if they don't have any superstars to name. But I think that'll be a very, very good series as well. Probably I was a bit biased when I said Pakistan-Australia, because I think New Zealand and South Africa is a good one. England and West Indies, like I mentioned, is also a good one. I mean, if you're a Test cricket fan, I mean, you've got a feast coming up.
Yes, you mentioned that New Zealand-South Africa series, and a few people think it might be kind of one-sided. A few people, people who rate the New Zealand team very highly and don't rate the South African team, they'll probably dismiss this series saying it's an easy win for New Zealand. But you've got to factor in no Williamson for New Zealand, no Taylor for New Zealand, no Watling. He's obviously moved on. And Trent Bolt is also missing one of the two test matches. So that even evens up that contest even more. And historically, some people might find this fascinating, but New Zealand have never, ever defeated South Africa in a test series. They've only beaten South Africa twice in test matches. So these are matches, not series. It's like Pakistan against South Africa. Pakistan have a very weak record against South Africa in test cricket historically. It's improved slightly after the last series, but it's similar with New Zealand. They've got a very weak record in test cricket historically against South Africa.
Yeah, indeed. And one thing that I don't like about this series is that it's a two test match series. I mean, when you have two such competitive sides, you hate to see it being drawn 1-1, or it just like feels like it finishes too soon when you have only two test matches. But you're right. I mean, New Zealand are kind of looking up to their next generation with four of the notable and the permanent fixtures in their 11 not available for the whole series. So that will bring the contest even closer. And South Africa, like, I'm very amazed. There must be some sort of work need to be done in the media, a documentary or something, that how come they keep producing such talent and not going too far from the Under-19 World Cup, that the youngster that came and went ahead to be the top scorer, he's called the Baby AB. It's just so incredible. They have, considering the setbacks that they have had in the recent times, you know, South Africa to be keep churning up those players. I mean, this is incredible. So yeah, that series needs to be closely watched as well. And New Zealand, being the World Test champion, they have a lot, I mean, to hold on to. And with four of these stars missing, I think they will have to do really well, play out of their skins, I think, to beat South Africa. But it could be very close.
So coming back to Pakistan hosting Australia, you've mentioned about high-profile series. Is this the biggest test series in Pakistan since 2005, when England's Ashes-winning team toured?
Certainly, without any doubt. I mean, couple that with the tour, the Indian tour that happened in the same season, and Pakistan hasn't seen any high profile cricket since, and this tour will be right up there. And it's funny that the first test match is played at Rawalpindi, and that was exactly the case when first test was played on Australia's previous trip, 1998, in Rawalpindi. So, I mean, yeah, I just can't hide my excitement, to be honest, for this series. We've had a few ODIs, few teams come and play in T20s, a test match with Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, South Africa. But I think you have put it absolutely correctly. This is the most high-profile series in almost like 17 years in Pakistan cricket's history. And just can't wait for it to begin. I was just, this coincidence that I was mentioning about the strength of the teams, and Pakistan need to know what is their strength. So the last test match that Pakistan, the last tour of Australian team to Pakistan, 1998, that Rawalpindi test match, Australia won that test match. And Pakistan lost the series 1-0. And if you go back and check the scorecards, I actually saw some of that match from the stands. Pakistan went in with three specialist spinners, and Azhar Mahmood being the second seamer. And it backfired on them spectacularly, because Stuart McGill took 9 wickets, and Colin Miller also took some wickets. And Pakistan that was a similar situation where there wasn't much quality of spinners, but they just went in with three spinners.
Is Colin Miller the one with the funny hairstyle?
Yeah, with the blue. I mean, you must have seen those, that footage that's gone viral. But what I was saying, like, Pakistan went in with the logic and theory that it's subcontinent and we'll just fill our side with spinners and we'll roll Australia over. Doesn't matter if the spin quality was good or good enough. And that exactly what happened, where the spinners were taken apart. Saqlan was the only quality spinner in that trio of spin, but on his own, he couldn't do much damage as well. And he was taken apart by, I think it was Steve Waugh, and Michael Slater got hundreds, or was it Justin Langer? Now, Justin Langer got out early, but it was Michael Slater who got that 100, and Pakistan lost badly.
Yeah, it was definitely Michael Slater, because I remember when he was for the when he was doing the PSL a couple of years ago, he was at Rawalpindi, and Rawalpindi, and he was mentioning he got 200s here in 94, 98, and the ground means a lot to him.
Yeah, we stood together on the in the media box when he came. We were doing, I was doing for Radio Pakistan, and we looked down on the ground, and he told me he got 200s, and I told him I never liked him for that, and we had a good laugh. But yeah, he did make 100, and he did make 100 in 94 as well, in Rawalpindi Test match, where Salim Malik got the double 100 and Fleming got his hat-trick on his debut. So there's some fantastic memories from Australia touring Pakistan. And also there's a coincidence that I think for memory, we can check the dates as well, because that Test match was also played in March, I think. And in March, sometimes it rains a lot in Rawalpindi. And in that Test match, it rained when Pakistan was looking to save the Test match. And it rained so much that if it was for any other ground in Pakistan, the play would have been abandoned and Pakistan would have gotten away. But Rawalpindi Stadium at the time was the newest stadium in Pakistan. It was built in 1991. So the drainage was so fantastic that with the whole city, I mean, it was drenched with water. The stadium got dried pretty quickly and the game got on. And Pakistan eventually lost that match.
Right. So the squad has been announced today. Generally, the 11 sort of picks itself, barring one or two players. You know, they've won 7 of their last 8 tests. And as I've alluded to many times, that one test they didn't win was a one wicket loss. So the 11 more or less picks itself. But still, there'll be one or two places up for grabs. Obviously, Abid Ali has not made the cut due to health and illness. And Shaan Masood has been recalled. What's your take on the Shaan Masood situation? Because on social media, there's a lot of support for him, which has surprised me, because by my calculations, this is the 7th time he's being recalled since his debut. 7 times. This will be the 7th occasion he'll be recalled, assuming he plays the first test. So what's your take on it? Are we going around in circles? Because to recall a player 7 times in and out of the side, you know, I feel that we should be looking at other options, not just going back to the same players over and over again. He was dropped for a reason.
Okay, I agree with you to an extent, but the reason for the support is that Shaan Masood has churned out a lot of runs lately in every format that he has played. And then even when he was dropped from the Pakistan team last time around, there was a debate that you have to give openers a longer run than that, because he just scored 100 in England not too long ago, but then he had a lean patch, and a lean patch was such that he couldn't score a run. He got like ducks in 2 innings out of 3 in New Zealand and didn't make much anyway. So then he went away, but the support, I'm just thinking about the word you used for a lot of social media support for him. The reason being, I think he's a very hard worker. And a lot of people who follow the game in Pakistan, they've watched him from close quarters, how he went back to his process and how he improved and how at any given opportunity he has performed. I myself has seen him score 190 in a first-class game, the 10th round of Qaid Azam Trophy. And he looked flawless, to be honest. And then his white ball cricket has gone to another level. And if Abid Ali was fit, I think he wouldn't have got the opportunity, but Abid Ali got ill. So he's got the opportunity, but if you ask my personal opinion, I think he deserved to be in that squad. And I think he deserves to be in the 11 too, because his competition is with Imamul Haq. And I don't think Imam has played well enough recently to warrant him a place in the Pakistan team. I was even surprised to see him in the squad. So that is my thing. And like you said at the beginning, that Pakistan's 11 picks itself. So if Shan gets in, there's hardly one place that you can debate on, and that would be the second spinner. You want Noman, or especially with going in Rawalpindi, I think Fahim will play because you need a seeming all-rounder as your third seamer. But two spinners, I think Noman and Sajid and Zahid, they have to figure out. Also, not to forget that Nawaz is in the mix as well. Depending if conditions are like really dusty or dry, I think Nawaz will be in the reckoning for that all-rounder position at number 7. Because he's done well recently. And when he played first-class cricket, he did score runs as well. He's very handy back. So I don't see any other changes in the team. Although, talking of social media and the media pressure, I think Azhar Ali is under immense pressure to hold on to his position, especially with Saud Shakeel breathing down his neck, who's performed at every level. Remember, Saud was on that Pakistan A tour in the summer to Sri Lanka, not summer, like in December. And he really performed well over there. He scored 100 in the limited opportunities that they got because of the rain, shortened games. But he's the one who's been knocking on the door for quite a long time. And Azhar Ali, in my opinion, should make the cut for the first test match. But if he's off the boil, I think he would be looking over his shoulder.
But he got a half century in his last test match. But anyway, that's moving on. Imran Butt. I'm just thinking of alternatives if they didn't want to go back to Shan. I think Imran Butt deserved a longer run. I thought he offered so much to the team. Even if he wasn't scoring, I just thought his slip catching was phenomenal. And I think it's so underrated in test cricket, slip catching. I felt that he could have benefited from a longer run. I feel that we should have looked at the bigger picture in terms of what he was offering the team, even when he was not scoring.
I said I would like to disagree on that because Imran had got a fair run. And even in the first class cricket, where a lot of the batsmen were churning a lot of runs, especially in the Punjab leg, where the conditions were so batting friendly, Imran Butt really failed to impress. And he didn't come up with big totals as the other openers were getting. And especially if you are with Pakistan team, I mean, you're told when you come and play first class cricket, you need to show yourself that you're different from all the others. And his technique was quite fine out as well. I mean, one game in Lahore, I remember that there was just a little bit of seam movement for the first half an hour of the game. And he just couldn't survive that. And he got out in the second over where his team, I think, got close to 600 runs on that pitch. So that also, and then whenever he had the opportunity, he couldn't convert his starts into big scores, even in first-class cricket, after getting left out. No. So I thought at the time he thought his chance is gone because Abid and Abdullah were pretty secure. No one knew what was going to happen to Abid, of course. So Shan was in the run. He got in. And I'm still surprised at how Imam got in, but yeah, that's how it goes sometimes.
Imam was in the squad for the last series in Bangladesh, so it's continuity there. But I'm just thinking of...
But his first class season was like pretty disappointing, especially the seeming wickets when he came back from Bangladesh.
Okay. Yeah.
He still looked out of sorts.
But I'm just looking at other options they could have considered if they didn't want to go for Shan. Perhaps a bit of a left wing move, you could say. A left field selection. Fakhar Zaman, what do you think about his prospects in test cricket? Because he's made a couple of half centuries on his test debut, I believe, against Australia. Last time Australia toured the UAE. And if you look at Pakistan's openers, one of the debating points has been the scoring rate. They score quite slowly. They're not putting enough pressure on bowlers. Fakhar Zaman can change that, at least in Asian conditions. Should he be consideration?
He should definitely be in the picture. I agree with you. And if you ask my personal opinion, I think I would have liked Fakhar Zaman to have had a longer go in Test cricket when he got his debut, because remember the 250s that he got was a low scoring game. And he was the top scorer, I think, in both innings against Australia. And that was quite something. If any other opener had gotten that, he would have had a longer run. But Fakhar, for some reason, has been always labeled as a white ball cricketer. But I can't disagree with the fact that you mentioned that even in Test cricket, Pakistan needs to force the issue with the run rate, especially if you get in, you got to make it count. Yeah. And I made this point the other day as well, that this is kind of rebirth of Test cricket in Pakistan. So if you produce a brand of cricket in Test cricket that is attractive, you can almost be the third country after Australia and England where the Test cricket is thriving. Because at the moment, I mean, the audiences are really hungry for it. So if you can grab them and then produce a brand of cricket in front of them that they want to come and see year in, year out, then definitely you can have a new beginning of Test cricket in Pakistan. Remember when cricket went away from Pakistan, nobody was watching Test cricket at the stadiums. It wasn't a spectacle anymore. So that is the opportunity Pakistan has. And to fulfill that, I think players like Fakhar Zaman, who forced the issue, could be a huge attraction, even in Test matches. That's my personal thinking. But as far as ground realities are concerned, unless something drastic happens, I think he's still a fair distance away from that Test selection.
Yeah. You sort of wondered what happened to Fakhar Zaman's career there. I can give a bit of brief background. Is that obviously he went to South Africa after his successful start. And there he got found out. And then there was a long, long gap before Pakistan went to Australia. And Fakhar didn't have an outstanding 2019 World Cup, if you recall. He only made, I think, 150 against India. People were debating whether he should even be in the limited overs team. So Test cricket was a long, long way away.
Exactly, which is not the right way, but you're right. That's exactly what happened to him.
Yeah. So basically, he was out of sorts in limited overs cricket, and which is his forte. So Test cricket was almost out of the picture, and he's never been close to contention since. But that's Fakhar Zaman. What do you think about the absence of Shadab Khan in the Test team, in the Test squad rather, because he's been the player of the tournament so far at the PSL? I know T20 cricket and red ball cricket are completely different forms of the game, but he's too good a talent just to be a white ball specialist.
You're absolutely right again. And there was, debate in some quarters. I mean, it didn't catch much flame that the number 7 slot, the all-rounder slot, can go to Shadab in Test match cricket. He'll be an ideal, because then you can have a finger spinner with him, and then you can have three-pronged seam attack as well. So that will give you that extra edge. And I think if Pakistan cricket is thinking in the right way, which I think somewhere they are, so that should be the plan going forward, because Shadab is, like you said, too good a talent to be just restricted or limited to the white ball format. And this is my personal opinion, I want him to be that number 7 for Pakistan in the long run, because, like I said, it gives that balance to the side. And with absence of quality spinners, he can do a job with the ball, and especially the kind of form he's in. I think if he plays Test cricket or longer format of cricket, he's only going to get better. And with his batting coming on like it has, I mean, he could be that ideal number 7. And the sooner Pakistan gets to that, I mean, the better it will be for the Test side, because then that hole will be filled in the middle order. And to go with that, he's an exceptional fielder as well. So that'll lift the standard in the field as well, not just himself, but he pulls the team. And also a long shot, he's really impressing everyone with his captaincy as well. So you need to have leaders, you need to have competitors in the Test match side going forward. So I think think tank should be thinking along those lines. And if not this season, just make him play some first-class cricket next year and eventually get him into that number seven role.
Yeah, and Shadab has a very impressive batting record at test level, particularly overseas when Pakistan have toured England and South Africa. You know, he's had impressive averages. He's made some impressive contributions with the bat and he's looked good. That's the main thing. He's looked good technically. When
he's playing. Looked good, as good as any of your top order when he played those test matches. Yeah. And even with the ball, I mean, whenever he came on, he did make an impact. I mean, he was not your traditional match-winning leg spinner that you expect from a wrist spinner. But remember, that was very early in his career. That's what I said. Like, if you have a long-term plan, how to develop him into that number seven, I think if there is no emergency this year, just let him play some first-class cricket and draft him in. And that's also give you a better balance in home conditions, because then you're going with two proper spinners and three seamers. So you can't go wrong from there. But if you go with two seamers and a part like a batting all-rounder, Fahim is neither a batting all-rounder nor a bowling all-rounder, to be honest. He's pretty good at both without being the specialist of any. So Shadab, he can give you that edge as a batter. And like if he plays more first-class cricket, he could be your full-fledged spinner as well. So going forward, that I think that should be the plan, or that should be the thought process.
There are a couple of spinners in this squad, such as Muhammad Nawaz and Zahid Mahmood. Are you in agreement with me that Shadab should have been picked ahead of at least Nawaz?
Like I said, his current form is good in white ball cricket. You can pick him on talent. He's talented than both of them. But if you're following a process, then you can't pick him ahead of these two at the moment. That's what I say. It's important for him to play some first-class cricket and then be in the reckoning for the test squad, which should be the case. But at this stage, I think Zahid and Nawaz are ahead of him in the pecking order, just for the mere fact that they've come through the process. And you don't want to undermine your process going forward, because then it sends the wrong signals to all the players.
Now, one selection that perhaps people will not talk about and will not generate much debate is the exclusion of Bilal Asif, who was in the test squad in Bangladesh. He didn't play, but he was in the squad. And if you recall, last time Australia toured in the UAE, Bilal Asif took 6 wickets in one of the matches. Australia were flying. They were like 100 for zero at one stage. Finch and Khawaja were opening. And then Bilal Asif came on and he changed the game, basically. Do you feel he should have been retained, or has Sajid Khan's performance meant that now he's far down the pecking order and that's the way they see it?
I don't think Bilal Asif will be in the reckoning anytime soon, especially after Sajid's performance in Bangladesh and then in the final of the Qaid-e-Azam Trophy. So he's holding on to that off-spinner's berth now. And you're talking about that previous series where you mentioned Bilal got 5 wickets. Another forgotten man is Muhammad Abbas.
I was going to comment to that, yeah.
He's quietly slid off the radar. And it was expected, I mean, because the way his pace had gone down and he wasn't very effective, especially in subcontinent conditions. Even in England and Australia, New Zealand, where batters have worked him out. So he slid off of the radar, and you'll see him in county cricket more than in Pakistan colours.
I know people debate about the standard of county cricket, but last year in county cricket, in four-day cricket, he was unplayable, particularly in early season.
I think if you bowl in April, I think you'll be unplayable as well.
Right. That's your view of that. Okay. Yeah. That was my defense to people who are saying that he's finished and he lacks the fitness and he lacks the pace for cricket. I was quoting his county performances from last year, but obviously county cricket and the standard of county cricket has attracted a lot of debate and criticism.
Not just the standard, just the time of the year that they play. I mean, you live in England, you know how it is in April.
Yes, but the standard as well in terms of 18 teams and whether that's good for productive first-class cricket. Like we've seen the standard improve since Pakistan have narrowed it down to 6 teams. England are still, you know, going on the 18-county system, which has generated a lot of debate.
That has generated a lot of debate, and that has probably been an eye-opener for some of the Pakistani critics as well, that how the debate of quality versus quantity is actually taking place pretty much all around the world. But on England, I mean, we'll try now one of our podcasts if we can rope in some of the people involved in English cricket to see how they're looking to move their cricket forward, especially that the criticism they've come under after the Ashes defeat. I mean, the system needs an overhaul over there as well.
Now, we've got the Women's World Cup starting next month in New Zealand. What will be a successful campaign for Pakistan? There are 8 teams participating: Australia, England, India, New Zealand, South Africa, West Indies, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. So we know Pakistan is going to lose to Australia. We know Pakistan is going to lose to England. We know Pakistan is going to lose to New Zealand. Who can they beat? I think on a good day, they can possibly beat West Indies, India, and South Africa. Bangladesh is the only match where we can say that they should definitely win. What will be a good campaign for Pakistan women's team at the World Cup? Is it 1 win? Is it 2 win? Is it 3 wins?
Definitely the more wins, the better. But you know, in Pakistan's context, the way the women's game has come along in the last few years and the prominence they've got, I think results are now taking precedence over the mere fact that there is a representation and they've been given proper attention and coverage and limelight as well. So now the focus has slightly shifted to see what the results are. So it will be very important. And I think heads will roll if the campaign wasn't successful. And like you said, if they win a couple of games and be very competitive in the other games, that would should still, I think, qualify as a successful campaign. But it'll be very interesting to see what kind of performances they put up, especially against the bigger nations like the Australia and England, New Zealand and India of this world. But if they roll over like very cheaply and they're one-sided contests, then probably there will be an inquisitive. But if they're very competitive and they give their best shot and play according to their abilities, I think they should be fairly competitive and they should come away with a couple of wins and a few very creditable fighting games. That should, I mean, realistically would be a good campaign.
Yeah, I think that the 2 wins will be a good effort from them. I expect them to beat Bangladesh, and then you have to add to that by beating one more team, maybe West Indies. And I think that will be a successful campaign for them, 2 wins, because they've been winless in the last few World Cups in 50 overs. They've come home with nothing. But just one point on women's cricket that I want to add on is Pakistan a better team in one-day cricket or 2020 cricket at the women's level in your view?
I mean, generally, if any team that's coming through the ranks and getting better at their skills, the shorter game reduces the difference in quality between the two sides competing. So I think Pakistan are better off at T20, in my opinion, because the period is so short that the difference in quality, like I said, reduces. But having said that, 50-over game has come a long way since the last World Cup. I mean, there was a series against West Indies, which they lost, the Pakistani girls lost. But that was a very, very valuable exposure because those games were telecast and there were like proper attention to them. And that would have been a springboard for all these girls to motivate and inspire them to go to another level. And PCB, this is where I made my previous point. PCB has made sure that the girls' cricket has a lot of attention on it. And that's why I say, like, the expectations will be higher this time around, simply for the fact that they've been looked after very well and their coaching and training has been looked after pretty nicely, because PCB is aiming for a very, very competitive Pakistan girls team as well. So probably this will be the start of something new in terms of the women's cricket as well.
So as a general point, Pakistan have been upwardly mobile in terms of results recently. They've won 15 of their last 17 international matches. What do you put this down to? Do you put this down to more cricket on home soil, improved domestic structure, or we are seeing the fruits of the PSL, or that we just have three or four really quality players in the current era, or do you put it down to the standard of the opposition? What do you put Pakistan's recent success down to if you had to pick one particular point?
It's hard to pinpoint one particular reason for the upward turn. Like you said, we got a generation of good players and they're pretty young and they've been invested upon a lot. I mean, remember Babar Azam was persisted with for quite a lot of time before he came good, especially in Test cricket, and Shaheen as well. So that's one thing. But okay, being a very close to domestic cricket, if you ask me for one reason, I think Pakistan's domestic cricket has been very, very competitive for the last two seasons. And not just the first class cricket, the white ball tournament that I saw in Rawalpindi last year. I mean, if you watch it from the ground, the pace of the game was incredible. And that was at domestic level. And at the time, I thought, like, you can compare this domestic tournament to any other tournament in the world. And there was no foreign players in that. And the competition was so intense. I mean, pitches played a part. So everything, all the points that you mentioned, they have a contributing factor in it. And probably nothing more so than the competition in the domestic cricket, because it's intense, only six teams. And it's the survival of the fittest for the players as well.
Now, one point to almost finish this particular episode is on Indian cricket. Is Indian cricket going to lag behind because they're not allowing their players to play in T20 leagues around the world in white ball cricket? Are they going to lag behind the rest now? Or is that a big obstacle for them? We've recently saw them get clean swept in South Africa in the one-day series on the back of a bad T20 World Cup. Is that an obstacle for them that they cannot play other leagues around the world and therefore they're not developing their white ball skills in different conditions?
Abdullah, it's a long debate, I think, because the way the Indian cricket has dominated since the turn of the century, I think, where Sourav Ganguly took over. And also remember, if we've seen, like if you're old enough like me to have seen how the West Indies era started and then ended, how the Australian era started and ended, I see similar signs in Indian era as well, because first of all, your most influential players, they're leaving one by one, and your core strength is kind of going. And also what it does is when you have a very successful international team, almost a generation of your backup talent is lost because they can't get in. So if you like, if I give you an example, in the Australian era, you must remember players like Jimmy Marr, Stuart Law, they could never get in. I remember Jimmy Marr scored two double hundreds against the touring England side. And he didn't have a long international career. So when you have a very established international side, there is a generation of players underneath that don't go to their recognition. You want to make a point?
England's white ball team is kind of like that these days. Like, you've got so
at
many
the
good
moment.
Players.
Absolutely.
So many good players who can't break in.
Only 11 can play. And what it does, my point is to conclude, my point is that when you have that kind of success at the top level and your best performance beneath them, they don't break into that setup, then the generation below them, they're not used to, that they don't see enough motivation or inspiration to get anywhere near that national team. And eventually when that core group of players goes, the second generation is lost and the third one, like the one underneath it, is not as prepared, because they see like my idols, like Jimmy Marr and Stuart Law, they're not playing. So they don't push themselves either. And eventually, as it happens, their turns come when they're not ready for it. And this is a natural process. That's my theory about it. But yeah, I mean, not allowing the players to play internationally could be another reason, especially if you know that they're not going to break into your national team. So why don't you let them play elsewhere all year round? Your core, the players, the band of players that's just beneath your core players, you can allow them to play elsewhere. So, I mean, it's a natural cycle. I hope I put it correctly, but yeah, this is how I think.
Yeah. Just on that point of the, it's different in women's cricket. In women's cricket, they allow their female international stars to play in Big Bash in the 100 in England, as far as the Indian women's team is concerned, but different stance as far as the men are concerned. One more point I wanted to get from you is that who would be your vote for India's next test match captain now that we know that Virat Kohli is not continuing?
Well, it's a tough one. And just connecting the previous one to this one, like you mentioned about their women cricketers, I think there's a lot of very, very sensible brains in India working at the moment. And I'm sure that they will use this argument in favor of allowing their male players as well to go abroad and see play in the other leagues and enhance their skills under different conditions. But for the test captain, I mean, at the moment, if I would see it right, I think there's no better man than Rohit Sharma, in my opinion. It may not be the popular opinion, but Rohit Sharma, whenever he's captain, he's shown that skills of leadership. And with the way the side is transitioning, I think they need someone like him who has that extreme talent of him, his own, and then also his abilities as a leader. And we've seen plenty of proofs of that he's a fantastic leader. And I think he should be the man. I think they're thinking about KL Rahul as well. We do follow a lot of cricket, but for some reason, I don't think that KL Rahul or any of this generation cricketers has just touched the heights of the previous one, the likes of Kohli, Rohit, and Dhoni. So if Rohit is still there, he should be the captain.
Okay. Last one, this one. This one is going to be one word answer. I'm going to ask you about each series, each of the four test series. I want either the winner or it's a drawn series. The name of the winner of the series or the drawn, or whether it's going to be a drawn series. So let's start off with South Africa and New Zealand. Who's going to win it, or is it going to be drawn?
I think South Africa.
Okay. Next one, England in West Indies.
Drawn.
Okay. Sri Lanka and India.
India.
And lastly, you know which one this one is? This one is,
it's Pakistan, Australia.
Yes.
I think 1-1.
1-1. Okay, so you're going for drawn. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't record this and don't play it after the series. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Okay, that concludes the questions. I hope you enjoyed the episode.